morning, honorable members, and let me first thank you for the confidence that you have shown in me. To chair you know, very important meeting at this stage of the development in our country, where we are trying to grapple with issues of balancing issues of security with issues of economic growth. Both are very important and they need a deep insight before birth. We come to one position or the other, and then we need to be clarified on every aspect, and then as we move on to the 1st of July. In the 1st of June, this is where this is going to happen. I welcome the DGAD team, and I welcome the chairperson of Tourism with her team, and all the people that have raised this portfolio committee meeting for your interest in our business, which you cannot already see for granted. Having said that, and without much ado, we shall deal with the issue of apologies if they are any, and then secondly the issue on the briefing with regards to the Department of Home Affairs on the total number of children traveling into and out of South Africa and citizens' related ability to obtain unabridged birth certificates. To the briefing by the Municipal Demarcation Board on progress made in the delimitation of the municipal ward in preparation for the local government elections in 2016. And then it will be closed. So, without much ado, let me announce first the apologies that I have. It is from Honorable Mr. Bomo and Honorable Mr. Kwe. Those are the two apologies that I am having in front of me. They are both written apologies. Are there any other apologies?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. First, I'd like to express that
okay, thank you, Chair, Honorable Chairperson. And I'm sorry for not recognizing you. I was just elected now, so I did not have all the information with regard to this meeting. So, without much ado, I'll ask the DG to take us through item 4 of our agenda.
Honorable Chair of Social Development, and as well as Honorable Chair of the Tourism Committee, and the Honorable Members. As a department, we're here today to present the state of readiness for the department with regard to the implementation of the unabridged requirement for unabridged certificates. And Chair, we want to preface that by saying regulations will be implemented from the 26th of May 2016. So today, they are 1 year old. The only thing which has postponed is only the implementation of unabridged certificates. So I think that's very important. And so we'll be giving a background of it and what has been the international benchmark which we have done on this matter. That is the affiliate that is only South Africa, which is requiring an unabridged form. And then we give what has been the statistics of movement of children in by the parliament, and then the regulation is going to support the implementation of the law, which is passed by parliament, not by the department. The regulation produced a number of changes in relation to travel of minors in and out of the Republic. These changes are in line with South Africa's international obligation to care for child trafficking, and also in line with the provisions of the Children's Act of 2005. That's why we're happy that social development is here. It is estimated, Chair, that 30,000 minors are trafficked to other state borders every year, and 50% of these minors are under 14 years. In order to enable travelers to prepare for the implementation of the regulation during the minor traveling, its implementation was postponed to the 1st of June 2015. So as from 1st of June 2015, the immigration regulations require that a parent, whether married, singing, and divorced, but I'm explaining, traveling with their children, which is minor under 18, must, in addition to their passport, produce an unabused certificate of the child reflecting the particulars of the parents of the child, and any other document with similar. So what we are saying is, not all countries are using a document called unabused certificate. Others are calling full birth certificate, others are calling whatever. But what is important for us is to say, as long as that document has got the similar details like the unabridged business case, we are exiting and entering South African passports. In terms of the South African passport and travel documents act, both parents must provide consent in as far as the issuance of a travel document. So this is not the first time that parents, when the child involving the child, when you get a passport, another parent must give a consent. Because once you give the passport, it means that child has got an ability to leave the country. So both parents must have consent. That has been implemented long time ago. It's not something which is. And Chair, it's when I was saying, I wanted to start now explaining what these things now mean. Then I was saying, in the case of single parents, where the other parent at the time of birth registration did not acknowledge paternity, such consent would not be required for the purposes of the child. So in terms of this, a single means single in the true sense of the word. That is, the person who's single and the parent, the father's details were not taken into an unabridged certificate. So in that unabridged certificate, in the NPR, that child is not linked to a father. It's only a mother. And in that instance, you are the single father. Therefore, no requirement for that consent. Single parent, who by virtue of agreement at the time of birth registration had acknowledgement of paternity from the other party, must produce consent from such party for the purposes of traveling with the minor. Chair, it is the choice of the partner to agree to the details of the father in the unabridged certificate. You are not forced. But once you take that decision, you have waived your right as a single parent as far as that child is concerned. I don't say, let me repeat that. If at the time of acquiring an unabridged birth certificate, as a single mother, with the father acknowledging the paternity of that child, and you agree that the growth of this child is dependent to both of you, then you put on an unabridged birth certificate. That father has got the qualified to be custodian and everything of that child. But you do that at your own agreement. Once you have done that, it means you have waived your right as the senior parent. You are saying we are now both of us in the affairs of this child. Chair, as we speak, the Department of Home Affairs is going up to the Constitutional Court, whereby a child is fighting the father. The father does not acknowledge the paternity, but through testing the father has been proven that it is the father of his child. Now the father is refusing to put his name in the unappreciated state of that child. That child that is saying, no, you are violating my constitutional right because you are my father. But that letter is still going for Supreme for a constitutional court. So I think that is a point which is very important as well as the second one. In the case of a divorce, the parents were custodians of child or children is said must produce consent from other parent for the purpose of child. Say, when you go to a divorce process, it is not simply say once we divorce, then the children are for the other party. It is not. It depends that in the decree of divorce, in that process, one partner given the full custody of children. If you got the full custody of children, therefore, you won't require a consent in the event that you are the one who is suddenly divorced. But if you got a shared custody, which that is not decided by woman. If during the divorce process, the judge of the court in the decree said these two people have got a shared custody of those children, the consent of the other party has to be obtained. Where a person is traveling now with a child who is not his or her biological child, he or she must, among others, produce a copy of an appraisal certificate and affidavit from the parents or legal guardian of the child, confirming that he or she has the permission to travel. So by 1st of June, no child is going to cross our border without those documents based on the cases which I have. So we have done the standard operating procedures for the above and they've been approved for implementation to ensure uniformity in all parts of the in this regard, when we presenting to the portfolio committee about this unabridged birth certificate changes, Honorable Member Raputi recommended that the department must prepare a leaflet which will make people not to understand exactly what this thing means. So I've got that, but this information is still on the draft, so we'll circulate at the end of the meeting. What will be posting now in our website, and we develop the leaflet which explain exactly what this thing means and how it's going to work. But I will distribute it. So I think that additionally, the department presented these requirements during the civil registration and vital statistics conference that took place in Cote d'Ivoire in February 2015, and there was no objection. That conference is the one which the countries in Africa are pushing the issues of civil legislation. And in that meeting, no country said, I don't have an unappreciated legislation. But I'll be doing want to permit. And when they're going to get to permit, surely you must go and apply in person. They can't get to permit from anyone. You must go there in person. Secondly, it is a mandatory treatment. If minor is applying for visa and traveling with guardian or one partner, say we even know an additional rules in the UK that unagreed birth certificate must be valid for a particular period. Don't get it once and done. Then Canada is requires a 40% of country, but as well exempted on a permit. However, consent form must be signed by both parties. U.S. birth certificate and consent form signed by both parents is required. Australia, consent form signed by both parents. Schengen countries which are in Europe, unabridged birth certificate is required to apply for the visa. Now, check the question is, which one of this one posed as a problem? Are we saying now South Africans have not been able to travel to UK before the 1st of June? Are we saying Nigerians were not able to travel to this country? That's because South Africa now have not been able to travel. If they were able to travel to those countries, why would it make them not to have them if they have to come to South Africa? So, what I was saying with this is that South Africans themselves, now, if they have to travel to those countries, they will come into the Department of Foreign Affairs, get an unapproved birth certificate, and travel to those countries. In addition, parents will tell you there's something called a vault certificate. Other countries are not even only happy with the unapproved. Vault means is that copy of the registration which you got from there, that first form which you call DSA-29, which was filled. They need that. So there's requirements, but that's what we are arguing here to say. Here are the countries in the world. They are requiring this requirement. And people have been traveling there. So that's why when we were in the conference in Africa, no country said to us, we cannot meet this requirement. And I remember, Chair, when we were introducing the issue that we want a passport which is machine effective. Countries in particular in Spain, they will say, no, we can't do this. But the question is was asked, how do you travel to USA? How do you travel to Russia? They have two passports. One, missions in the group, when they travel to those countries, but when they come to South Africa, they don't want to meet them. But they have them. The day will stop. Our neighbors are coming to our country every day. Well, so let's come now to the movement of children through our borders. Say in 2011, when we say citizens, so in South Africa, we have about 968 children arriving and departing. And then foreigners, about 1.3, and give us 2.2 million. And then in the following year, 2.4, this is growing, 2.6, 2.7. Now, sir, the question which we need to ask ourselves, what is the risk? 2.7 million children just traveling in and out with nothing. And social development will tell you the figure of unaccompanied children. And then we were saying in South Africa, what we do not do, what is the cost, cost of illegal immigration? Our constitution is saying a child, whether it's born of a South African or not a South African, whether that not South African is legal or illegal, that child qualifies for a grant. So if we just trafficking opportunities. Child trafficking, children which are used for labor in the farm, and all those kinds of things. So a big regulation that child trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only South Africa which is doing that, it's the rest of the world. So we're just explained to say these records, we have taken it from our statistics, from our movement control system, but there were still like a few points which now this year, all of them now will be the new movement control. So let's come now to this implementation. So as the 10th March 2013 onwards, an unabridged certificate, you get it on the spot. March 2013, so children were born in March 2013, going this way. They go into the Office of Home Affairs and get an unabridged certificate on the spot. And Chair, as we have been coming to the committee with this issue of self-esteem, parents are not complying. Children must be registered within 30 days. We're still at a level of 50% or even close to that, who are registering their children, even now, when they are allowed to do so. So what we need to do is to push for the parents to comply. So what this thing now means is that therefore the population of children that will be required now to apply for an abridged certificate in line will be children born between 1996 and February 2013. And again, once that child reaches the age of 18, there's no longer need an unabridged certificate. So here we are talking of a population. I'm going to give you the money. So we're not talking about the child who's born now. The ones who are born now going forward, there's no problem. The ones which are talking about are those who are born from 1996. And it's also a threat. It does not mean that the older the child will all of us have it. So we are talking when this thing is projected, which I'm going to come with a figure to say, what about 17 million children?
Mm-hmm.
We are within that bracket. But it can't be correct that the whole 17 million children want to travel in one day. That check, we said, you know, but on the 1st of August, mm-hmm. we put a process of how to deal with this matter, which I will give the two figures, and how we are going forward with this. So what we have done, we looked at it. There is a problem with this 17 million. Remember, we always come and say, according to State of Africa, children born in a year around about 1.2 or less million. So with those years from 1996 to now, we have 17 million children who are within that bracket. Out of that, we went to the system and look how many are in possession of a passport. Because out of that 17, it's only 1.1 million children who have applied their voter passport. So basically, we can say probably those will be the children who can want to travel, but the others, they still have to apply for the passport, right? And also, Chair, what I want to emphasize on this issue as well of an abridged certificate is to say a requirement for a passport for anyone who travel has been there. I don't know. Who is this South African who has not been able to travel because Home Affairs did not issue a passport? All South Africans have come to the Department of Home Affairs, applied for a passport, and been able to travel. So we are saying, what will be the problem now for us to issue an unabridged certificate? A passport is the one who's got a longer process than an unabridged certificate. But anyway, we are saying now what we are talking about is the 1.1 million. Then out of the population of 86,000 children born in 1980, they are no longer now required in the hospitals. What I'm saying, the number would be dropping anyway as they get again. Then we came with this project called pre-modification. What is the difference now on this pre-modification? Because remember now, currently, if a child is born, you go now today, you apply for the other person, you get it on the spot. But if now you were born prior, you were not able to do that. So what we have done, we have looked at that 1 million, we have gone to pre-modify, so now that unabridged birth certificate can be available now in the office, whether that child is not born after 2030. So that when you go to the office, once we pre-modify it, you send an SMS to the parent, and the parent is able to go to the Office of Home Affairs and get the unabridged birth certificate as well. Or even if you have not applied, you will find now that unabridged birth certificate in the system. So, as we said, that what we have to do now is to implement this so we can accelerate the issue of the issue of this unabridged birth certificate. So the system has been upgraded, and now so I will give you now where we are in terms of the numbers. So another thing which we have done, we have issued this instruction to say when a parent goes now and apply for the passport, even if now we are not in that bracket of 1.1, at the time you apply for the passport, apply for your unabridged birth certificate at the same time. And we are guaranteeing that once you apply that, by the time that child is to travel, which is at least to 8 weeks, you will get your unabridged birth certificate. But I will still get in terms of this pamphlet, what we have even done, if I can mention it now, to say, as a transition measure, as a transition, in the event that you are not able to produce that unabridged certificate within 6 weeks, you need to travel. The office will issue a letter which has got the details of the parents and the mother who are getting it from the MPI. So that now when you go to the airport, you'll be able to travel. So there is no likelihood whatsoever that the child cannot be able to travel. Then, Chair, out of that, you know, I was saying that we have now the number of 26,000 which we dealt with it. Then we looked at it, which is the last lesson. There were children who were 9,112 who already applied for the unabridged birth certificate, which we need now to measure that by 1st of June. They've got that unabridged birth certificate. And also the 5,000 which now they applied, and also now we have to make sure that number 14,000. Out of that number, Chair, as of last night, we are left now with 4,000. Because remember, what I can make is 1st of June. So by Thursday, Friday, we have cleared all those unabridged birth certificates. But as I'm saying, in the case that there is one which is not clear, that child is to travel, who will issue that letter, which will make sure that child must be able to travel. Then the other thing which we have done in the system is that it's the issue of record in terms of this, that child was born in 1998 now. And then now we need that card from the clinic and the HN29 was not able to find. That function now called F170, we are able now to go and request to the parent and submit that and be able to issue the unabridged birth certificate. And then now we've also got about 10 million rand from National Trust, and so this has been reported to be able now to deal with the issue of our retrieval of documents. So, Chair, this is the basis of that number I was given to say. We have to go to the system and look but in 1996 there were 86,000 children who have passports. And then in 1997 there were 12,000. And then we are saying they're going to, from May to December, was 69,000. So we are already saying that those ones are already out of the bracket. And then this number, which is left, is what now needs a passport. But in it, already were modified about 389,000 and another 12. So now what we are left in that population is about 551,000. But those ones are the ones I'm saying. They've got their passports, but now they do not have a certificate, but they have not applied. I think that is a positive. It does not mean they've applied for an unapproved certificate while not drinking. It's just that they've got a passport. So now they still have to go and apply for an unapproved certificate and be 18 now. If they get there, now the rest already I can get into the sport. So the difference between 1 million and the 551, they can get now those unapproved certificates on the spot. And then now these other ones will still need to come and apply for us. They will be able to meet that. If we don't, we'll be able to issue that certificate as a So, Chair, it's what I was explaining. I was saying that we're left here now with this 9,000 plus 5,600. So now we'll be clearing it. I'm left with the 4,000. So by Thursday, I won't have anything which is sitting in my desk for my president that will be able to send them on the first page. So it's the same. I was explaining the details of that. Chair, it's what we're talking about here to say the birth registration, though we are saying is not yet at the level which we want. But what we're saying, just from 2013, by taking that decision to say now you are getting your unapproved birth certificate on the spot. So it means that on 2012 there's 1.1 million children born. But those were registered within 30 days with 602. So it means that 602,580. That's what they are unabridged. That's the thing. It was no longer issuing now abridged and then unabridged. Then in the following year, 650, in another year, 704. But the problem between 704 and 1.2 million is not a departmental problem. It is the parents who did not go and apply. But even if they come to apply today, they will get it on the spot. So I've talked about how we've managed now to mitigate the issues of if there's no documents. We're able now to look at that function 4 or 5 178 and we send an SMS and then we send reminders to the clients to come forward. So what would be the benefits of acquiring this UPC? We say it would be mainly for child protection and security, and then also to be the ability for children to travel now across the borders, not only borders and approach is not required by South African government only. And as well, we know that that unapproachment certificate is used for access to socio-economic benefits like social grants. And again, now even the Department of Education now started for registration of children at preschool to make this unapproachment certificate. And as well as in the issues of medical aid schemes and estates. Mm-hmm. And then, as we said, now other countries need an unapproachment certificate for permanent residence and make applications to their countries. So, Chair, we are saying that by 1st of June, the new immigration regulations with regard to the UPC will be implemented. And we are saying every year that number will be reduced. And then we have issued now a passport control instruction which requires parents to apply for an unapproved certificate at the same time that they're applying for a passport. And we'll be now announcing numbers which will make sure that if a parent has got a problem, they can call that dedicated number and be able to make sure that we'll assist.
in the
document.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, good morning, members. Mine is to appreciate the joint speaking. It is actually very much assisting. Given all the regulations and everything that was actually explained to us, I would also encourage Home Affairs to ensure that, particularly in the rural areas, teenagers, say 15 years and so on, give birth all by themselves in hospital, and before they depart, being discharged from the hospital, they have not met with their parents properly to decide whether the father, who is also a teenager, is ready to accept to co-parent the child. And many a time they are forced to write because the form is a state father. The child who's underage is not very sure whether to write this unknown father by the parents, known only to the mother, because it creates tensions between the teenage mother and the parents. So that part of it, because they have to fill the form before they leave the hospital, whereas they have not been orientated by the family as to whether the other family, because we might regard this as a mother and a child, as parents, but in any way, they remain not adults in real life. So I would want a clarity. How is Home Affairs going to manage this? And it was also my great interest, Chair, thank you for invitation, to discuss issues which are not appearing now, but in another meeting that you might decide on, those minors who are along our borders, inside South Africa without any documentation, and they are always referred to as unidentified minors, and they cause it more cost than South Africans because they are not known. They have the right, as the South Africa is a ratification to all those laws that you know as a committee, and they have to take care of them. They must eat. They must get all the basic needs that are required as rights in South Africa, rights of children. Their rights are equal to rights of South African children. So that matter, you might think, because it might cloud this meeting since we have got another matter. But those are the matters, including the appreciation, Chair, that we don't feel being inconvenient in other matters, but no department can effectively work alone, as well as the portfolio committee thereof. Thank you very much. And I'll be out for 30 minutes. There's a special meeting for our budget. I'll be back because I'm very much committed to this invitation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for a very important contribution.
Chairperson, thank you very much for inviting the committee to participate in this activity. And DJ, thank you very much for the input that you've given us. It has really given us some clarity. Notwithstanding that, this is quite a mammoth task, and there is a lot of work that has been done and that has been needed. Does your department have the capacity across South Africa to deal with these issues as expediently, as you say, as possible? Secondly, do you use our foreign missions to also assist in these matters where applicable? Thank you.
Let me give the because in the case of citizens, arrivals and departures are more or less. I just wanted to flag this so that if there is anything, you respond to that. Honorable member of the GDA, then honorable member of the GDA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. My name is James Sports and I'm a member of the Tourism Portfolio Committee. Mr. Chairperson, I want to say up front that this joint sitting of the Portfolio Committees on Home Affairs, Tourism and Social Development is long overdue, and it's a great pity that in fact it is convened less than a week before the implementation of these regulations. We have highlighted all along serious concerns with regards to the implementation and also the consequences. And I know that the Honourable Minister, Ruzi Gigaba, often refers to these consequences as unintended, but I want to submit today that in fact we should call a spade a spade. These consequences are in fact now intended, because we have received some alarming reports from the industry in terms of real losses. We have seen a decline in many of our important key markets since these regulations were announced, and with days ahead before the actual implementation, we are certain to receive more cancellations and also a huge drop in foreign arrivals. And therefore, I must submit today that these committees should have been convened much earlier, and the DG has referred to the regulations being promulgated way back in 2014. So we've had an opportunity, or there were many opportunities for us to convene. In fact, the DA has called on these committees to convene so that we could discuss them in an open forum, and at the same time also inviting the key stakeholders, for example, Tourism Business Council of South Africa, SATSA, which is responsible for tourism inbound, and also the other key tourism stakeholders in South Africa. In fact, the Minister has committed also last year in October that he would convene a meeting with the tourism stakeholders in October of 2014, and regrettably and disappointingly those engagements were never held, and so to date there's been no consultation with any of the key tourism stakeholders. Now one must be mindful of the fact that tourism is responsible for 9% of GDP in our country, and it creates more than 1.5 million job opportunities. So this is the industry that will be severely impacted upon. But I must also say up front that as the DA, we are very mindful of the fact that we need to protect and safeguard our borders, and with specific reference to child trafficking, which is a great concern to us, and therefore we need to think of methods to be able to curb that, but not in such a way that travel regulations will be imposed that will severely impact our economic prospects going forward. Now, I think one must, they also asked from the DG, why only now has these advisories been made available? In fact, I've listened very carefully to the DG, and he said that the pamphlet is now with the government printers, and the introduction of these regulations will come within 5 days from today. So, in fact, since last year, May 2014 up to now, in my view, and I'm certain that many others would share this view, there's been ample opportunity to share the important requirements with the industry, with South Africans, and also with the travel agencies. Because as recently as last week, many of the airlines have been requesting these regulations in order for them to communicate this effectively to their prospective passengers. And I've been closely monitoring all the online publications with regards to our airline industry to make sure that at least they are equipped with the accurate information so that they would be able to pass that information on to travellers. So it's very disappointing that a year since the regulation should have been introduced, a year later not much has been done in terms of communicating these regulations to the key stakeholders like the airline industry and even members of this committee who's only received this advisory now today. But Mr. Chairperson, one must be very mindful of the fact that when you pass new regulations, one must do an impact assessment. And you know, one must also look at what quantifies these new regulations. So our question today is simply what studies or analysis have been conducted to determine the scale of the problem and the prevalence of child trafficking in South Africa before introducing such regulations. Now, on one of the slides, reference was made to a huge number of children being trafficked. And we would argue that there are not 30,000 children being trafficked annually. That figure was produced by Roxanne Williams of an NGO called Operation Mobilization. And when questioned on her source and her claim, she confirmed to a journalist that she was misquoted. Now, the stats produced by SAPS on the actual number of children who go missing in South Africa every year is not even 2% of this estimate. Now, if the number of South African children being trafficked is so high, why has there not been an increase in the number of missing children reported by SAPS? Surely the parents of these missing children will report it to SAPS. And also the HSRC report commissioned by the NPA found only 8 cases of children trafficked out of the country between January 2004 and January 2008. So why then introduce this regulation when the scale of the problem is not as big for South African children travelling out of the country? And even during the World Cup, Mr. Chairperson, there was a huge expectation that children would be trafficked. And the Minister of Police, in a response to a parliamentary question, said that there was no noticeable increase of trafficking during the World Cup. Now I want to come to that particular slide, page 7, which is currently displayed. We would argue that the department is relying on inaccurate data and anecdotal evidence to justify a regulation that is very heavy-handed, and it will impact on the 2.7 million children who legally enter and exit this country. And we have provided sufficient reasons to suggest that the scale of child trafficking in South Africa is not as serious as the minister or the department is claiming, because this 30,000 children being trafficked, as reported on one of the slides and also in several of the documentation provided, is in fact misleading. It is not a true reflection. And in fact, we do have proof of the actual number of cases that have been reported, and it's considerably less. But yes, we must be mindful of the fact that we are trying to deal with a very important problem, but I think these regulations, as they stand, will not be able to curb this particular problem, and then the consequence will be severe on our economic prospect. So I want to challenge this department to produce the evidence that suggests otherwise. I agree that human trafficking is a much bigger problem, but child trafficking is not as big in South Africa, and there can be little justification for this provision in the regulation, and therefore doesn't make sense to introduce a piece of legislation that will unfairly inconvenience and impact on the rights of 2.7 million children and families who travel in and out of our country. How many children have already left the country without unabridged birth certificates before this regulation is coming into effect, and what will happen to them when they return and if they do not have those documentations? And then a further important point referring to that slide of 2.7 million children. Now, if 2.7 million children travel through our borders as legitimate tourists, and there are so few cases of child trafficking, what is the rationale for burdening the tourism sector with such a restrictive policy that does not really address a problem which actually does not exist on the scale that the department claims? Now, I think it's also important for this committee to take note, and I'm asking for indulgence, because it's the first joint sitting of this nature, and the greatest impact will be on the tourism sector, so therefore I would like to make a case today on behalf of the tourism sector, which creates 1.5 million job opportunities in South Africa. Now, the WEF Travel and Tourism Competitiveness Report puts South Africa visa policy at 67th place out of 114 countries. It goes further to state that restrictive quality policies such as the cumbersome visa requirements diminish tourists' willingness to visit a country, and I quote. The report goes further to state that South Africa's visa policy, where our country currently ranks 67th place, is poised to become more stringent with the imposition of new immigration laws that also impacts visitors, and this could certainly harm South Africa's travel and tourism competitiveness going forward. Now, Mr. Chairperson, whilst the world is moving towards less restrictive visa policies, South Africa is doing the opposite, and the Minister's reasoning is based on a source that has been misquoted in the local media. So therefore, one needs to consider ways to mitigate these risks. It is critical to implement technological advances and innovative processes that can increase both the efficiency and security of travel. There is a need to consider how to implement improvements in early warning systems, risk profiling and scenario planning, visa systems, data sharing and passenger profiling at airports. Now, the key challenge is to generate the necessary levels of collaboration amongst international institutions, governments and the private sector. And I would like to outline some possible solutions, because it's important that when you not only criticize but perhaps highlight some serious concerns with regards to these regulations, that you also put some solutions, possible scenarios forward in order to address. The solution to child trafficking is not restrictive visa policies, but the implementation of the Chapter 18 of the Children's Act. Better policing to reduce the demand and eradicate syndicates. What we should be doing is, with the cooperation of the Department of Police and Justice, we should be banning any person convicted of human trafficking and prevent them from entering our country. Because there's also databases available of convicted persons involved in human and child trafficking from other countries that we can use very reliably to reduce the chances for these crimes. Red flag details and data and biometrics of missing children data from other countries onto our movement control systems should also be considered. And then the capturing the biometrics of children entering and leaving the country, link it with the adult that they are traveling with, so that if a case of a missing child is reported anywhere in the world, we will have the data available to determine if the child arrived in the country and with whom, where they lived, etc. And lastly, Mr. Chair, we should conduct more intelligence gathering of where the child trafficking hotspots are in the country and determine which countries in the world that child trafficking is arrived, and focus on measures to tighten up measures to reduce the chances of trafficking from those countries into South Africa, instead of treating every child traveller as a possible trafficked child. And then, Mr. Chairperson, during the State of the Nation address earlier this year, the President, in his address to Parliament, made mention of these travel regulations, and he specifically alluded to the fact that a review would be instituted to look at these regulations and to balance the safety of our country versus the economic impact that these regulations would have. And once again, disappointingly, that review has not been instituted, nor the review that Minister Gigaba has referred to in October last year, because certainly the travel and tourism industry has not been privileged or has not been consulted or made part of those deliberations. And this is indeed a lost opportunity. And therefore, Mr. Chairperson, we ask that the implementation of these regulations be suspended until such a time that these review teams, either the one by the President or the one by the Minister, be convened, so that those involved in travel and tourism can be part of these deliberations, because what message does it send to foreign investors that our government is willing to legislate without any proper consultation? So, Mr. Chairperson, these are our submissions, and we have based it on accurate information that has been made available to us, and we do believe that there needs to be a balance between protecting our borders and also the scourge of child and human trafficking, but we must look at it very carefully so that it does not impact negatively on our economic prospects as a country in terms of the great value that tourism has to South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, for the presentation. And let me suggest that let us submit that written presentation to the department so that they can carefully consider some of the things that you have mentioned. And then there's if it was submitted earlier, perhaps it could have been much more effective, and perhaps it could have had
the Department of Social Development, I think I also have to emphasize on that aspect, that the department must take to consideration those things that she raised, because we must not just take for granted that everyone, including those people from rural areas, are having the very same benefit with people in urban areas. When it comes to fair parenting, I think our background taught us very clearly that we have more challenges when we go to ground, especially in rural areas. I think she covered very well, and I think it's the issue of the department to check on those issues when it comes to these things. But nevertheless, the presentation on page 3, you spoke about estimation of 10,000 minors. My question would be, you have details of those things, did you? Have you been prosecuted with people? How many people have brought to book? And so on, because this is very serious. This is very serious. When it comes to the matter of divorce, or divorcing, I think the DG will be very aware that some of these matters take very much time to be settled. What are we saying as a department? Coming to your pre-modification team, what does the pre-modification team do? I just want to get a clarity on this one, because when you go, I think it's 15, I'm not sure, when you have come with those figures of backlog, 9,000 something, and then of the passport. So I just want to know the intervention that you propose through this pre-modification team. What does it mean? Also, the clarity of passport through UBC. How does it work? If a child has a passport, does it have to go through the application of the UBC again? I just want the department to clarify some of those issues. Thank you, Chair.
When you were doing this, you did consider the issues
think the most important thing is about the safety and the protection of our children. It's not about profit of those industries. I was suggesting that if you could have brought in the Department of Health, because they've got the school health, if ever in the rural areas, the school health nurses, they can be able to educate those pregnant young girls in the rural areas what is acceptable safe in relation to this certificate. But let's think of our children first before profit. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. My colleague has covered most of the questions.
the pre-modification of current land on an approved certificate application allow for applicants to change any incorrect information on the spot, or you have to write and make another application for change of information. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Now it's time for the department to respond. And then let us give about 15 minutes because we have had another presentation.
So, thank honourable chair and the honourable members for the question as they provide guidance to us. Chair, would this be of the restriction of children by the minors? I want to give the American person to touch on this third time. Chair, I think let me deal with this matter to make a choice. It can't be in between. It's either you take this route or you don't take it. Because if you do that, you need to do what we call an opportunity cost and say, if I do this, then it's fine, I can forego this. But we can't have the both ways. Let me go and say, so that's what we'll respond on the chairperson of social development. From the chairperson of the tourism to say that the department has a capacity to deliver this. Chair was saying, yes, we have. That's why, Chair, we ask the question, for a South African to travel must have a passport. That regulation has been here for many, many years. Who is the South African who said, I've never been able to afford to travel because so much has been issued in the yes, before, Chair, we were producing a passport taking us 680 days. Now our passport is 13 days, a little 2 days. Because we're it's not a manual process because now we've automated. A smart card check in the Department of Home Affairs takes 7 days, including the courier of that. An appropriate certificate, you get it on the spot. That's why we said a child who's 2013 will be smart. An appropriate certificate on the spot. I'm going to come and I explain what pre-modification means. It's exactly the same as that. So you get your whole unapproved certificate on the spot. The only number which I will come to is 4,000. I will say, I will be getting it. So that's what we do. And then the important questions that Chair asked, which is what I'm talking about. That thing is that what Chair was talking about. You've got arrivals which are 700. We've got departures which are 60. Where is the difference? It's here. In South Africa. It's that the ones now who goes to our schools and the ones who are in the social plan, and we've got overstayers who remember chapter 7 in this regulation. When we say people are taking chances and say to us, well, if I overstay, I'll pay 1,500. Because I overstayed. And then now from Europe, it's a pound. 1,500 is equal to 15 rand. So, nothing. And when we say, we will declare you undesirable, you won't come to this country for 5 years to try and avoid this. It's a reality that people are coming in numbers in our country. Where is the proof? Project Fiala. When I was going to those areas, people aren't documented. So that's what we're talking about. So it is really a reality. That's why we are coming with this. Coming to honorable forces, you know, said to us, we can't say one child lost means nothing. There must be 10,000, and therefore we do something. It is not. At least there is no dispute that there is child trafficking. It saying there is no chance of taking into traffic. The issue is just a matter. So what I'm saying for where I sit, Chair, I'm not sure. For me, who have received a call from a parent who says, where is my child? He's asking me, where are the children? So, Chair, to us, one child is equal to 20,000, 2 million, or whatever. We want to prevent a loss of one child because that child belongs to a parent. I am not sure that here in this room can be a parent who can say to me, DJ, don't implement this. I don't mind, I will lose a child, it's okay, as long as it is one and it is mine. And then say, no, as long as it is mine, I don't have a problem. Then it's okay. But I won't get that support to say, if you can give it to me and say, your child, if it's lost, will be fine. Then that's it. So, Chair, we're saying that that's what we are looking at. And then again, Chair, these regulations were published in May 2014. In May 2014, it's not correct that we are going to end now. We've been meeting with those industries. No, I can give you the proof. But that's what we did. Minister met with the people in the tourism business. We did. So if you want the proof, I will give you that. So it can't be correct to say we have not met with anyone. And also, Chair, he said now the data, as we said, Chair, we are getting these reports. I think on a Sunday Times or no, Business Day of 2 weeks ago, South Africa has improved on their status on tourism. So this one writes this, that one writes that, that is different opinion people. But it does not mean we must become a less culture. We are the sovereign state. We have to take the decisions on the best interest of the country. That's what we have to do. Chair, I am not sure about this one to say countries are becoming less in terms of this. Are those who are secure? I don't know how Kenya can become less visa requirement. I don't understand that how Nigeria, which is sitting with Boko Haram, can become less there. In fact, Chair, now, those countries in Europe, we're saying people must not get into those boats and go to their own countries. Who go and drown in the high seas? If not that less visa, why those people go like that? Why they don't just go? No country in the world, Chair. Now, as we're talking now, which is what we're saying, in the U.S., we'll never go there, Chair, without going first and apply in person. That's only the border with Mexico. So, which this country is not that? Chair, the issue of the police implementing Chapter 8, yes, we are part of the Jessica cluster. These processes are trying to help to deal with those issues. Capturing of the biometric, it is there in our supply. We are busy doing that. And we said by January, we'll be rolling out a biometric in all our parts of it. Where we'll take photo, we'll take biometrics. Once that has been done, that's why we always talk about risk. We'll do another risk assessment. We'll say, based on what now we have, what can we go and loosen it up and all that? So, well, I don't want to leave this room and say we'll be postponing the implementation of the regulation. And then the issue of talking about the which is supporting this issue of awareness, when I respond to it, and then we persecuted these people. Chair, as we said, you know, that's why we always talk about this. It's illegal, so we have to go and trace other people and their number. I would treat the people, deal with them, and send them and back. So we would do that. Then the question of what true modification means. True modification means that we update the system, because remember that when we go and register, these people are not late. In the true modification, you link the father, the mother, and the child. So that in the NPR, they are linked. So that by the time that we go and apply, once I apply those details come out, well, once I put the ID number of the father or of the mother, everything, that's what a pre-modification means. So we are doing exactly that, so that people can have a capability of getting the certificate in the office. Well, the passport, both, we need both. When you get the passport plus the unapprehended certificate. What improvement we are looking at now, sir, which India is doing. In India, the unapprehended certificate of the child is in the passport. So that's what we're going to be doing now going to the future. So that now we don't need to have an unapprehended certificate and all that. So that's what we're doing. So when Honourable Minister was asking on what circumstances to apply directly, you know, it's not all. It's only people who are saying that person died, it is before they got a death certificate, and I would get the doctor certificate, and then in that instance we do so. Or somebody is insane, and then we do. So it's not too many cases which are going to be coming to me, because that is the requirement. That's what we need to do. So we've created a consent email address, which is going to be managed by people, and then they will bring those things to me after the enforcement. And then what would happen if a father could not be found is exactly what we're saying, that the court, in that instance, will take a decision. And then children internally, officer is responsible for in and out. Internally, yes, we are part of the JCPS cluster, and then we can work on that. Legislation of birth, yes, we are running our outreach program. That's why we want that we always emphasize this to say, let's go there to the people, let's try to create a possibility for people to register. But what is going to happen after December 2015. No, it does not mean that people will not be South African, but there will be a stringent process. Only the minister will be able now to approve for that child to be registered, and we need to understand what will be processes for that. Yes, that's what I was talking about. As the Honorable Chair of Social Development did talk about the cost of which is sitting on social services. About this, so that's why it needs to be managed. Then in terms of will the changes allowed on the spot, yes, already. If you go as a parent and apply for an unapproved certificate, and then when you get at home, you find that, hey, this person spelled my name wrong. Within 7 days, you go back to that office, then you're ready to correct it. So that's what now this pre-modification is associated. But it is said that if it is a name or it is a date of birth within that period. But where this problem is, people are older now already accumulated a lot of things and say, I want to change my surname and my date of birth. That's what they present to us. So they'll be able to do that. Then we'll give you 2 minutes to explain now that issue of how do we deal with the matter that this one is a minor, but he wants to register a child, which can now be initiated.
Thanks, DJ. I think just basically, we have been struggling with what we call false registration before. Why a grandparent will come and say, this is my child, and the child was registered under the details of the grandmother. But then, with the children given identity numbers upon registration, every person who gives birth will be able to, we can register the child under the identity number of that mother. The grandparents will obviously have to assist the child because they are underage in the filling of the forms and the signatures. But basically, as we indicate, you have got 30 days within which to register. So the grandparents, they still have a chance to deal with the issues of the registration of the father within the population register also. So there's still that allowance that families can go back and deal with the issues, and then when they come back, schedule the father's visit initiated before the mass, but the mother should remain the actual mother, the biological mother, for as long as they've got an identity number. Thank you.
Thank you. A single man.
Yeah, I'm thirsty.
Oh, it's not
I'm not going to run. Yeah, I'm so thirsty.
I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying that.
Thank you.
Education Board, and we respect your work, and we hold it in high regard, and that's why you have come to for a hearing here. And then secondly, we also welcome the Vice Chair of the IEC, Mr. Dylan, and the Mr. Yebia, the CEO, his Chief Electoral Officer. Normally CEO means Chief Executive Officer, but in this case I don't know whether he's still the Chief Executive Officer and the Chief Electoral Officer. So without much ado, but let me just stress the importance of this. People will have to know as soon as possible where they are voting. And then demarcation, sometimes people complain that we didn't know that we are now voting in this voting district. So it is very, very important for the credibility of elections for us to know very early. And you know that in one of the towns in the northwest, we have faced a lot of problems. And then sometimes there are problems of people getting back in and so forth. So we've got to make sure, and then in the process, try to improve our system and try to improve our participation in order to have a system that is credible, with integrity, and that people trust. I think the trust is very, very important. Without much ado, then, let us hand over to Mr. Manji. Over to you, Mr. Manji.
Thank you very much,
Pastor,
for the warm welcome, and the honorable chairperson of the committee, and the honorable members. The outline of our presentation will be at this stage, and firstly we'll just go through the process, and just to give background, we'll go through our legislative mandate, and we'll sort of put some kind of emphasis on the vision, mission, and values, because they are the key cornerstones of the work that we do. The legal process that we follow, the broad process and time frame, I will put emphasis on that because it will give clear time frames of what we are doing, where we are, and what we are going to do and receive. Update on what the delegation process and the update on the municipal boundary determination and conclude that. The purpose of the presentation is to brief committee members on the legislative mandate of the MTD, its vision and mission. To brief committee members on the processes followed in order to fulfill the mandate, update on progress with the work invitation process for municipalities not affected by the change of the I will explain for update on progress with Section 22 municipal boundaries determination. The legislative mandate of the board is premised on the determination of municipal outer boundaries with regard to establishing a criteria and procedure for the determination of municipal boundaries by the independent authority highlighted in the Municipal Education Act. The functions of the board as the section 4A and B are to determine municipal boundaries in accordance with local government and Municipal Education Act and other appropriate legislation in terms of Chapter 30 of the Constitution and render advisory services in respect of matters provided in the Act. The vision of the Municipal Demarcation Board is to be leading demarcation, especially knowledge, that the board aspires to be a knowledge center in South Africa that gathers and analyzes data on news criteria in order to fulfill mandatory responsibilities and facilitate decision making that includes effective local government and the right to social economic contact. Communities experience within the country. The key elements of the vision are to ensure the marketing decision as independent, valid, credible, and based on robustly reviewed and refreshed information, taking into consideration national and international assessments. Two, to the outward looking, ensuring that implementation of the strategy and mandate is more customer focused. Two, to ensure that there is a regular public engagement, raising awareness, educating and building capacity. For the first time in the system, the Unified Demarcation Board, in order to deepen the body consultation, it launched the process in September in December last year and brought most of the municipalities in one place to consider the draft, to hand over the draft notes that were a subject of consultation later. To ensure special planning through integration, MDEA aims to lead efforts by all role players to achieve effective social integration within the context of rapidly changing socio-economic conditions of local communities, while also addressing boundary problems related to traditional conditions. To be knowledge specialists on municipal boundaries and impact knowledge of the highest standard is a leader. And lastly, to be a key research and advisory institution on demarcation and social integration, having capabilities to anticipate the sector's boundary and knowledge requirements. I am stressing the vision, the element involved therefore, because they talk mostly to the consultation, consideration, and feedback for the decision. In doing this work, the MDB has strategic partners in the determination of municipal boundaries. Once the municipal boundaries have been determined, the IEC divides the national data into municipal segments, and the minister determines formula for the number of councillors in a municipality. MCs then determine the councillors, and they may deviate from the minister's formula up by 10% or lower from the formula by 10%. The MDD then determines the number of wards. 50% of the total number of councillors are white councillors, so that the MDD must determine the same number of wards. In this slide, I highlight the fact that the IEC is our strategic partner, because once we've done our work, we hand over the data to the IEC and we post the action to the commission. The municipal boundary determination commenced in 2011, as indicated on the slide, and was completed in 2015. Thereafter, the MDD commenced with ward delimitation in 2014, as again indicated, with the intention to complete this process by August 2015. While still working on the ward delimitation, the minister invoked Section 22 of the Municipal Delimitation Act and requested inviting members of public to make written submission and proposal. Notice were published in June 2015. Thereafter, the board considered all written inputs and resolved not to continue with a few proposals and proceeded to conduct subsequent meetings in terms of Section 8A of the Act and formal investigation in terms of Section 9 of the NGA Act. Investigations are currently underway. They are receiving final reports of the investigation now. The NGD will consider the outcome of public input and investigation and determine boundaries in terms of Section 81 of the Code in Instruction Amendment. Publish this in the provincial cabinet for objection before finalizing in July 2015. The word boundaries for the municipality that are not affected by the minister will be finalized by August and ended by the IEC. However, we have agreed with the IEC that as soon as we complete any batch, we hand it over to them for their consideration. For those municipalities that are affected by the minister's request in terms of Section 22 of the Municipality Innovation Act, we have a free copy of IEC that the words will be handed over in August 2015. The following slide explains about and expands on what I have mentioned. So, what we have done, as soon as the minister invoked Section 22, we embarked on a dual process. Continue with the work delimitation within the municipalities where boundaries are set, and go back and give you the boundaries as the requested. From the initial 80 postponed work consultation meeting, only 56 will be postponed until the board submission. All work consultation meetings for municipalities not affected by the minister's request and board decision not to proceed with the redetermination have been completed, except for some days which we have completed at the end. The work delimitation process has been split into two processes as I have mentioned. What I want the honorable committee members to note in this slide is that the board is determined to consult with each and every municipality. And what we have done differently this time is that even prior to developing the draft maps, we consulted with the municipalities on the ground as well as the province, and they assisted us with their GIS people who have got with full knowledge of the terrain in which we will be working. And the result of that consultation, we developed draft work maps and we invited all municipalities to launch in order to discuss the process going forward. Meetings have been held in consulting the public and they have been published in newspaper, community radios, and national news. So that they can board received this nation proposal in terms of Section 22, published all in terms of Section 26, received 58 submissions, and resolved to conduct public meetings as investigation on four registration points. In the fifth stage, the board received two and published one in terms of Section 26, received one submission, and resolved to undertake the investigation in one registration. Southern, the board received one determination, determination proposal in terms of Section 26. And that is the one that we have received. Natal, the board received 11 determination proposals in terms of Section 22. Published all and received 27 submissions and it resolved on that application. In Corporate, we received 5 determination proposals in terms of Section 23 and we published all in terms of Section 23. We received 38 submissions and we published all, we received 50 submissions and resolved to conduct investigation in 5 registrations. Northwest, we received 4, we published all, we received 18 submissions and resolved to conduct 4 registrations. In the last case, we received 1, published 1, and resolved to conduct investigation. Some areas, for example,
at a broader level between the commission and in the beneficiary. Now, there are issues, as you recall, that we have raised this method that we're concerned. Largely because whatever happens in the beneficiary processes, we have implications for the elections. When we started, our intention was to get finalized determinations by June. But obviously, due to the challenges that have been raised, it has not been possible. Now, what we had to do as a result of that was to shift our time frames in the election processes as a result of now, as you heard from the presentation, the intention from the delegation board is to hand over to the Electoral Commission by August. So we are very, very keen that deadline is actually achieved by the delegation board, because it will have serious ramifications for preparations for elections. But I'm aware that informally they indicated that the remaining municipalities, they might be able to give them to us by November. It's still really pushing it, it's too tight. From my perspective, it is extremely tight. But we will be happy if the majority, as the incident, is handed over to us by August, so that we can start the process. If there is anything, I have the presenter saying that there is an agreement between ourselves and the minister to have the elections as close as possible towards the end of the 90 days. We have no such agreement. We still trying to meet with the minister. But in terms of our own preparations, we are saying it is no longer possible to have the elections during the first possible constitutionally enshrined within the constitutionally enshrined period, which means within the first of the 90 days. It is no longer possible. Remember, when we prepare for the elections, we have to prepare the elections as though they will be called for within the 90 days after the date of the last elections. Now, that 90 days starts on the 16th of the 18th of May, and then ending on the 16th of August. And so we don't want to push the election date too far to the end of the 90 days, because if there is any problem that happens, then it means the constitution is going to be changed, because we will not be able to have the elections within the stipulated constitutional period of 90 days. So we have to try by all means to stick to the time frames that we have, because those time frames of course are driven by the constitution. It is not just that we just want to get information and proceed with the preparations of the elections. It's because we realize that the pressure that we have is that 90 days. We are operating within a very difficult period. And then we are trying to make sure that everything is fitted within that period. So we will continue having conversation with the communication board. We want to emphasize from time to time, we've been emphasizing this. We have raised it also here at the level of the portfolio committee to say that we slightly concerned that the deadlines, if the deadlines are not met, we will have difficulties.
I think it will be interesting for everyone for us to make sure that we meet the deadlines, but we'll see from where, but I am sure that I'm to the members of the committee.
I think
we'll
my last question is on challenges concerning in the last stage of the presentation. There is an issue of the participants in the line. Chair, if I may get clarity from the presenter and some details on that issue and what is the final decision of the board regarding the issue of the participants. The person moving to Houghton or is still with the Malama, what is really happening? Maybe if I can get some details on that issue. Thank you very much.
And the issue of using newspapers. How do you determine which newspaper is going to be used? Because, as I say, KZN, you only use the collection. What about those people who can't understand the issue? They are not catered for. And the other thing, the chair, I think it's a very concerned most of us is, because this consultation to our people on the ground, it must not just be a consultation for the sake of doing consultation, but we must take into consideration what our people are saying, really, because at the end of the day, it affects their lives. So now, if you look at page 10, the last bullet in, it says, all submissions are received as a public meeting will be met, analyzed, and submitted to the board for consideration. How do you give the feedback to those people? You just receive, you just go and listen to them, and then that's it. How do you go back? I mean, again, the issue of Madame Nele and Matatela in other areas.
Thank you very much. And then perhaps do we have a plan B in the face next time? And then secondly, these zones, these areas, yes, if we can bring the end of the year now, we have a way. And we keep everyone. I just want to be clear. And then secondly, following out up from Maxim's question. Is there consultation at the senior level of political parties? At the senior level, because sometimes you find that there are dynamics on the ground because of self-interest of those people, and not because of the actual reality, which are not in the minister's interest, or perhaps in the interest of having a free and fair election, but perhaps a violent outcome and so forth. So now, we expect to get, so that we are sure that these things have been checked. People now make a noise and then
they at some stage wanted to be excluded from Mpumalanga and included into Gauteng. That's a constitutional process because the provincial boundaries are provided for in terms of the constitution. It's not a mandate of the municipal demarcation board. I am aware that everything bound, people just look at the municipal demarcation board. And that, I think that was also another complication because when the first amendment to the constitution was done, when the coast boundaries were done away with, if you remember, I think in that region, there were cross boundary municipalities. The municipalities that had communities from both sides of the provincial boundaries. So at that stage, obviously, Machatiele ended up in Eastern Cape. But at the moment, even though it's not necessarily our mandate, but it affects us because people talk about it by way of municipal boundaries. They will tell you that our municipality wants to be in this province, and they approach the municipal demarcation board for that. Although we always channel them accordingly through the Department of COXA and the Justice Department, who will then facilitate constitutional amendments that goes to Parliament, essentially or primarily the responsibility of Parliament to amend the constitution. But at the moment, at this stage, or let me say in this round of demarcation, that has not come up significantly. I know that on the ground there's murmurs about it, people talk about it, obviously people want to specify about them, the name, the Eastern Cape. But it hasn't become a problem. I remember I was working in the Eastern Cape when we were doing consultation. I went to Machatiele for a public meeting there. People are still talking about it, but at least what we're getting is that they now understand that when they have to deal with the municipal demarcation board, it's about municipalities and the inside of the municipalities. Nobody raised an issue with the fact that no, we are not participating, we want to go to KZN. So at least at that level, because we were afraid that when we get there, that's what people are going to raise and they will be raised. With regards to policing, what happened is that immediately after the meeting, we received a proposal from the minister and we wanted to do consultation. An indication was made to us that there's unresolved issues of provincial boundaries. Therefore, as the municipal demarcation board, you can't come and consult us on municipal boundaries until the matter of the provincial boundary is resolved. And to us, because we don't want to destabilize the country unnecessarily, we then felt that we should suspend the public meeting that we were supposed to have. As of now, the engagement between the MDB at the board level and the ministry and the authorities in Mpumalanga to try and resolve that matter. But what I should indicate is that as soon as that is resolved, we will be able to proceed with the process that we need to proceed with. And the fact that a public meeting didn't take place in the context of the MDB, public meeting, if it's not needed in a particular place, the board can always take a decision in that regard. So we don't see that as something that can hinder the project that we're working on, except that if the communities themselves are not convinced about us going there and finalize our way, obviously as the board we will be sensitive to it. We don't want to cause unnecessary strife on the ground. There was a question about whether the board, the Bavian took IEC or MDB. No, it's the MDB. They took the Municipal Demarcation Board to court, not the Independent Electoral Commission.
I wanted to correct myself. Fabian Stroh is not under the is under the agreement. Not under the AEC yet. They resolved that.
Thank you.
then we will get a better community so that we won't see yourself also taken to court.
And for information, I think you take into consideration what the IC was raising in terms of the 90-day period. I was so worried. I thought you don't have any power. You just wait for the minister to tell you what to do. Thanks for a clarification. That thing of publication, I hear your explanation that you rely on your committee, but I think the board must already look at this issue. I seriously propose that you must already look at this issue. Because, for instance, if I can make an example, and you'll agree with me, Chair, because we're coming from the same region as the city. His Orleans Way does not cover all the population of the city. It should be look like you don't want to disseminate information to other people. You should stick to it. So I'm just making an example of about ETP. Even if the municipality is advising you, but as a body must go in extra mile to check if what the advice that you are giving is correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
very much for your response. But really, we've got to just